the Weekside Podcast, now twice a week, back in your ear for the latest on what's going on in the NFL. I'm Connor Rohr alongside Jenny Vrentis. And so we're recording this on Wednesday for Thursday, but on Tuesday night, Jenny, you were on a conference call with a couple of high-ranking officials in the league, among them most notably probably Jeff Pasch, the league's general counsel, and it seemed like the big news coming out of that was that, at least for now, nobody is anticipating any changes to the NFL calendar in the long term. And I'm wondering kind of what your takeaway was from that call and just what you thought of that news when you heard that.
Yeah, that was the clear message that the league was trying to get out. And Jeff Pasch said it several times on the call that we are planning for the 2020 season to proceed as normal with a regular slate of games, regular season. Here I'm saying regular twice, regular playoffs, starting on time, everything as normal. And he repeated that several times through the call, right? He was asked about a lot of alternatives. You're saying that the length of the season will be the same, but is postponement possible? Or could you play games in empty stadiums? And every time he went back to the same answer that our planning has been entirely focused on a normal regular or normal 2020 NFL season. And there was one exchange that I thought was somewhat telling. Troy Vincent, who's the league's EVP of football operations, was also on the call. And he was saying, from an operations perspective, he has to consider contingency plans and make sure that those are communicated to the clubs. And as soon as he said that, one of the league's PR executives stepped in and said, okay, well, let's kick it over to Jeff Pasch for a second. And then Pasch repeated what he had said, and that they had these two calls that day, team presidents and owners, this week, Monday and Tuesday. So in lieu of the league meetings, they had these conference calls, and Pasch said there was no discussion on those calls of any interruption to the season, basically correcting this assertion about contingency plans. I think in that moment, it was pretty clear that this is what the league wants out there, right? From Pasch as a lawyer, he's speaking as a lawyer would, and they're sending a message to sponsors that everything's proceeding as expected. You should account for us for the fall. Lots of companies are making cuts. No, you're going to account for the NFL in the fall, and we have several months between now and then, so we're just going to say we're barreling ahead. I understand from a business perspective, I understand from a lawyer's perspective that that's probably the smart move. But the problem is that this, as well as everything the NFL has done over the last 6 weeks, continues to be a little tone deaf. I mean, they're still talking about, well, what if we resume an off-season program? There's not, at this point, there's not going to be an off-season program, and they are making contingency plans for that. They talked about, Zoom meetings and the like, but I think it's time to have a real conversation about, well, what if the season is affected? We don't know if there will be sports in 2020. And when I wrote the story, I got a couple comments on Twitter from fans saying that they wouldn't be comfortable attending a game that 60, 70,000 people were also at. So it's really hard, as we've been saying all along, to project even a week or two out. And so I think the NFL is putting out this message publicly that they're planning for a regular 2020 season. But the reality is they can't know that at this point.
You wonder if it has anything to do with there was that Vanity Fair story that came out earlier this week where the person who currently inhabits the White House was calling NFL owners and, basically asking them to put on this unified front that the season was going to go ahead as normal and just part of this mirage that everyone's sort of living in or was at least living in a week ago or 2 weeks ago before this latest forecast came out. And it's bothersome to me that still, even right now, business is at the forefront of everything. And I think that that's what separates, everyone is comparing this to World War II or 9/11 or the Great Depression. And it felt like in all of those moments, when you go back and you read about them and what happened, everybody sort of banded together and there was a let's get out of this healthy first mentality instead of, well, let's do what we can, but also make sure that, like, you know, General Motors is still sponsoring the halftime show. And it's just, like, so ridiculous, the fact that they're pretending that everything's going to be normal. The Olympics are canceled for July. That's right around, that's the month that training camp starts. Training camp is only a month long, and then you get into the preseason and regular stadiums. There's, in my mind, no way that this goes on in a normal timetable. And to pretend that it does, I think, is irresponsible, and it sets, like, a weird precedent for everybody else.
Yeah, I think what you said there at the end, especially, Connor, it's irresponsible. It's not just tone deaf. It's sending a bad message that things might resume on a timeline that you don't really know, and that, you know, you're not encouraging people to kind of take this day by day and week by week. You're saying that money is the most important thing. And I think that's frustrating. I think that's frustrating for a lot of Americans to hear, especially right now when things are really getting bad. You know, I live in New York, and the last week here has been really difficult, reading the headlines and reading the news, and that's spreading to other parts of the country. And so I think it's difficult for people to be dealing with these losses and these strains and stressors in their communities, and to hear the NFL say, yeah, we plan on playing a football season. At the least say, we know that sports is not the most important thing right now. Like, at least message that on some level. And I think there was an absence of that. And I was frustrated. I felt that the message that came through the phone was one of defiance. Sure, maybe they have to say this to protect their business interest. Maybe Pash has to say it from a lawyer's perspective, but there wasn't any compassion. There wasn't any recognition that this is all a tough time for a lot of Americans, regardless of what position you're in.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, they're projected to be more lives lost. And I think the combination of Korea and more American lives lost than the combination of Korea and Vietnam. This is unprecedented. It's unbelievable. And to be able to, you know, just have the aloofness, or whatever purposeful aloofness, whatever it is in your job description that forces you to go in there and do something like that. I don't know. I mean, I think that's, you know, it's one of those things that I hope everybody looks back on when, knock on wood, we're all through this together, and wonders, you know, what kind of people were helping and what kind of people were looking out for themselves. But it does kind of bounce into our first news topic a little bit. And I'll just kind of read that now. Despite the league's troublesome confidence, it seems almost impossible to believe that 50,000 plus fans in 16 cities every Sunday will congregate together in packed stadiums. What would the alternative look like? And what would a partially fanless season do to the league's audience building efforts? I wrote about this in a story that I think should be up on SI.com by the time that everybody reads this. And I reached out to a trio of super fans across the NFL, sort of the fan that you think of when you think of a given team. So Pumpkinhead in Cleveland, and the Bird Lady in Atlanta, and License Plate Guy in New York. And, you know, I was asking them, your identities are so closely tied to you being at this thing. You know, part of your livelihood depends on you being at this thing. And, you know, your local celebrity is due to that. And a lot of them have charitable interests now that they've been notable figures as fans. And, you know, what would it mean to sit at home? And it's crazy to think that, you know, a lot of these people have never seen a game on television. You know, they go to games every Sunday. It's their release emotionally. It's, as Pumpkinhead in Cleveland told me, it's his time to see his family. It's their Sunday dinner, you know, their gathering. And it hurts them emotionally to think about the fact that, you know, right now this time is marked by an inability to see the people we love, and, you know, telling them that there's not going to be fans at an NFL season is basically telling a lot of people that, hey, that this time, the hardest part of this is going to continue on for a few months more. And I think that's hard for people to digest, maybe.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, Connor. One thing that's come up related to that is season ticket payments are due, and some teams are deferring them. I saw the Eagles last night had said they were, but the Panthers were not. I think it's kind of crazy to ask fans to be committing to paying for season tickets at this point in time. And the reality is, even if games are played in the fall, as I referenced earlier, there are fans who have reached out saying they wouldn't be comfortable with that. And like, even if they go ahead and feel that things are under wraps, has this changed how comfortable we are in big crowds? And I think that's an important factor to consider. You know, when would fans feel safe attending a big event? And the NFL has also said they'll go forward with international games. So they have to consider the status of the outbreak outside of the United States too. So I think there are a lot of factors at play, but my vote would to not, you know, if you have to play in a stadium without fans, you shouldn't be playing at all, because I think we talked about this on the podcast earlier this week, Connor, but just the number of people that would have to be in an NFL stadium to make the game go even without fans would, if you're in a situation where it's not safe to have fans, I don't think it would be safe to have that number of people in the stadium either.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting too is the NFL, you've heard Roger Goodell say it over and over, they're championing themselves as the grand diversion during these difficult times. But I think what they're not realizing is, you know, there are a lot of people who are hopelessly devoted to their product, and their lives revolve around everything that happens in the league. And by continuously telling people that everything's going to be okay in September, everything's going to be back to normal in September, you're setting people up. You know, license plate guy who I talked to in New York said, the Giants are my drug. I am addicted to the Giants, and I do anything I can to satisfy that need in me to be at this game. And to tell fans that, hey, everything's going to be okay in September, everything's going to be back to normal in September, you're setting them up to like emotionally calibrate themselves to think that everything's going to be over by the time, you know, the fall hits. And there's no way that we could possibly know that. And I think that that's a dangerous thing to do. I mean, I think that we need to be honest and just say like, hey, I mean, nobody has any idea what's going to go on here. I mean, the next 2 months could be totally insane.
Yeah, I think that false hope is an important point to make. And also the idea that when you release a schedule no later than May 9th, as they're now planning to do, which is just a couple weeks later than normal, you're inviting people to book trips and book travel and plan around home and away games that may or may not exist. So it's kind of this alternate reality that the NFL has been living in, Connor. And I think you and I have been frustrated about this for weeks, but it has seemed like the frustration has picked up a little bit. I've noticed that. I think with the NFL's call this week, I think a lot of people came off that call wondering why they were so strident and refusing to even really address any of the other possible contingencies, such as a 12-game season or pushing it back, which is not really that hard to imagine, because moving the Olympics a year is a far bigger task, and that has been done. And as you mentioned, that is during training camp. It's late July and early August. So they've already committed to moving that event 1 year back, which is a huge deal for athletes that compete once every 4 years in the Olympic Games in terms of that level, right? And it's a huge deal in terms of the amount of infrastructure and resources and contracts and broadcast deals and everything that goes into putting the Olympics on. And I know that the NFL is a big operation too, but the fact that they won't even publicly acknowledge that they have plans for a 12-game season or shifting it back, it's a little bit absurd.
Yeah, I don't know. What's your best, like, what would your best alternative be? I mean, I liked, somebody had suggested the other day, like, you know, if baseball resumes on July 4th, to basically have all of your teams in, you know, not a remote part of the world, but almost like spring training, where you have mostly everybody somewhere in the Southeast and somewhere in the Southwest, and you kind of play it like an AAU tournament for a little while, and just make sure, you know, baseball is a lot easier to social distance, because just by nature, you know, I mean, the players are spread out, and then you could eliminate the amount of personnel in the dugout, and you could get creative there. But I don't know, what would be a contingency plan for football? I mean, outside of just a fanless experience.
Yeah. And again, it's really hard to project. We certainly are not any expert in this area, so I don't know what the situation will be in August or September. But I think one contingency plan that makes a decent amount of sense is to cut out the interconference games. So you could easily reduce from 16 to 12 by cutting those out without significantly impacting how you decide divisions and how you seed for the playoffs.
I think that you would be a good, I would like you up on the panel of during one of those press conferences, the pandemic press conferences. You have like an assured tone. Like I remember when I first got to SI, we were like walking to lunch one day and I was telling you that I was having like stomach aches every day. And then you were like, you should just have some probiotics. And then I got probiotics and I haven't had a stomach ache in like 2 years. And
wow.
So it's one of those things where maybe it doesn't necessarily work that way, but because like it's the person who says it to you that you just naturally agree, you know, okay, Jenny is right about everything. So it feels good, you know, and then everything's normal. So I would petition any kind of governmental higher up to just put you up there because I think you could do a lot of good right now as a pandemic higher up.
This seems like a pandemic, your act of kindness today for the pandemic, because as anyone on the podcast can attest, I stumble over my words more than anyone needs to hear. So, but thanks, Connor. I appreciate that. Mostly, I'm glad to hear about the stomach aches. That's like a fantastic result.
Yeah. You know, you just got to take your probiotics. You know, that's really what it comes down to. But all right. What do we have for topic number two?
Colts head coach Frank Reich said this week that physically, Philip Rivers hasn't lost anything, and that he's confident the now 38-year-old quarterback can make any throw he needs to in the offense. Is this a false sense of confidence, or does he know something that perhaps the Chargers do not? Well, I would say the big difference between the Colts and the Chargers situations is that the Chargers' offensive line was pretty depleted last year, and the Colts are stronger up front. So that could help Rivers. But I do think there is a little bit of a false sense of confidence, and I think we've questioned on this show, Connor, the decision-making there, especially upon hearing that Brady had been interested in the Colts and they weren't interested in him. I think we saw a pretty big drop-off behind Rivers last year, and that really the Chargers offense was struggling to function. And again, the offensive line contributed to that. The injuries they had, I think we kind of a couple weeks into the season when you saw that the offensive line had accrued all these injuries and that he wasn't going to be able to play behind a solid front, then things just became untenable. So perhaps there will be a different outcome in Indy. But I think Rivers' play last season would at least give me pause about projecting success in Indy.
Is this a foreshadowing of if our fantasy league gets off the ground in time, if there is football in time, that Philip Rivers will not be your quarterback this year? Because I feel like every year for the last like 10 years, it feels like Philip Rivers has been your quarterback in our fantasy football league.
He was my quarterback the last 2 years. 2 years ago, it was a good selection. Last year, not so much. And perhaps that's informing my view, Connor.
Mm.
But I will say, like, I used to be a person that would draft a quarterback really high. And in the last 2 years, I shifted philosophy a little bit, you know, along with the rest of the world. And I kind of regretted getting away from that. But yeah, I would say that on the Jenny Vrentis Fantasy League in 2020, if there is one, which there may not be a fantasy football at all in 2020, I would say that I will be starting someone different. That's correct, Connor.
Interesting. Moving in a new direction.
Giving up my draft strategy to one of my opponents.
You and I are more like, I feel like it would be like if Greg Schiano and Rutgers were in the NFL, like you're Belichick and I'm Greg Schiano, and like I'm more of a happy feeder program to you. We're not really rivals. Like I'm trying to assist you in any way, and if I can also find a little crumb of success, then that's good, you know, and I can stumble into something. But I'm very happy in my role. Winning a championship on your staff a few years ago was one of the most rewarding moments of my life. So I would say that is, you know, you're just chasing that high from now on, you know.
But didn't you win last season?
I did win the championship this year. Yeah, I did.
Okay, so you're the defending champion. Okay.
I'm just saying that, like, that would be like, you know, it would be like Josh McDaniels going to the Broncos and winning the Super Bowl, and everyone would say, well, Josh McDaniels got lucky this year, but he's still no Bill Belichick. And Josh McDaniels, I think, would always look back at the time that he spent with Belichick as good times. You know,
Connor, this is some false humility. You're the defending champion. All right, back to Philip Rivers. What is your projection?
I think it's interesting that the entire 04 class is basically like falling apart physically before our eyes. I mean, Eli Manning retired. Philip Rivers was let go. The Steelers are placing an awful lot of confidence, I think, in Ben Roethlisberger being able to recover from everything that he everything injury wise from last season. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those things where if you're a team that does not get ahead of these problems, you're really hurting the near future. And it's so interesting to see the Colts do this in particular, because everything you heard at the combine, not this year, I was not at the combine because I was sick this year, but last year when Chris Ballard really started transforming this, was no team is building like the Colts are building. No team has this 3-4-5 year plan like the Colts are. This is different. This is something that's going to change the NFL. And while I still believe that that could be true, I mean, they've done an excellent job at layering the roster with talent, and I do think it's going to be competitive for a few years. This was like such a weird one-year solution, and maybe it's Philip Rivers is just a high-end bridge guy for a quarterback that you're going to draft this year, but you also don't have a first-round pick, so I don't know how that's going to happen, and it just seems very un-Colts-like to all of a sudden be pushing all your chips to the center of the table.
Yeah. I think what you said is probably right. They probably figured, okay, we lost Luck last year. We didn't have another plan ready. You know, they finished the season with Brissett, but they bring in Rivers to Band-Aid this year and they'll figure it out moving forward. But yeah, it becomes a lot harder, obviously, in the draft with their situation. I guess maybe they draft someone next year. This buys them a little time, I think. But they obviously think they could contend with him, right?
I guess, yeah, you know, and it's hard to put Frank Reich out of the conversation, especially given how weird that division is. I mean, the Texans, like we said last week, could completely implode. Gardner Minshew is starting in Jacksonville as of right now. You know, it's going to be hard for the Titans to get the same production they did out of Derrick Henry this year after a 400 carry season. So who knows? I mean, you know, maybe it is the right gamble and maybe they did kind of evaluate the rest of the division, but it's, I don't know. I mean, as a coach, you have to say it, right? I mean, you know, if Sports Illustrated signed me yesterday, they would say, you know, we still believe that Orr's got plenty of good years left in him, but we all know that's not true. You know, I mean, they would just be acquiring the husk of a man that once was a vibrant young beat writer. Right.
You're really denigrating yourself today, Connor, between this and underplaying the fact that you're the defending champion of the fantasy league.
It's how I sneak up on people, you know?
But I guess with going back to the Band-Aid thing for a second, I guess perhaps that's why they were more interested in Rivers than Brady, for example, because Brady wanted a two-year deal and they signed Rivers to a one-year. So it's a more temporary stopgap, I suppose.
Interesting. And interesting that you brought up the word Band-Aid, because I want you to read this next topic. I slipped a little banger in there. I think this is a good one.
All right. NFL EVP Troy Vincent recently mentioned that teams could have a one-time exception to consummate a trade while on the clock in an effort to battle the logistical pitfalls that come with a draft on Google Zoom. Is this enough to patch up the chaos, or is the old Taylor Swift saying, "Band-Aids don't fix bullet holes," more apt here? Wow, this is a spicy topic. Google Hangouts, right? Zoom is separate, or is Zoom part of Google? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, but regardless, this is a great Taylor Swift poll and not entirely unsurprising to me, because I know you're a big Taylor Swift guy, Connor. But
I am.
It may be surprising to some of our listeners who don't know that.
I need to Google it because I don't know. Like Justin, I'm a Swiftie. That's what it is.
Oh, right.
Justin Bieber fans are Beliebers.
Right, like the Beehive for Beyonce.
Beehive, yeah. I'm a Swiftie. Always have been. Anytime we can work it in, I think it's good. And who cares if we got Google Zoom Hangout wrong? You know, sponsor the podcast. Sponsor the podcast, you know, and then we'll get it right. Then you pay us to get it right, you know.
Well, this is a great topic because we actually were having this conversation on a group chat yesterday, Connor, a work group chat about how secure are these platforms really? Are they using Zoom? Are they using some other platforms? How easy are they to get hacked is what our editor, Gary Gramling, proposed, to which I was shocked. I didn't know that he had an interest or penchant for hacking, but that made me a little bit more skeptical of him, having heard him say that. but it's a really good call. Like, how do they make sure this works? And, you know, the draft, they've always got that hard landline, and it goes to the phone on the draft site, right? And, like, will they be able to set the same logistical options up, right? And if someone's handing in a card, they obviously don't have the ability to hand in a card in person anymore. So there are a lot of things that can go wrong. And I like the way you set up this topic, Connor, because I think you're suggesting that this could actually go really awry.
I think it could go completely awry, you know? And you know, all of the, just think about all the networking that has to be done now, like all the ground wire and hard lines that have to be laid. We don't even know half the places that these people are going to be. And then to incorporate this all into a telecast, I mean, I think it's just completely and totally ridiculous. And not to mention, I mean, when Gary brought that up last night in our group chat, that was the first time that I ever considered a hacking too. It's like, but anything could happen. I mean, absolutely anything could happen. And all of a sudden you're being forced, you know, you're putting Roger Goodell and the NFL in a situation to make a split second decision when they have been entirely unable to make a split second decision over the last 15 or 20 years. I mean, that's what Goodell's entire tenure has been marked by, an inability to be agile and make a split second decision. And so I think it's going to be fascinating that they're putting this all on themselves to try to make this work, when in reality, I don't know. And is that really going to fix things? It's like, oh, you get one mulligan card and then that's it, and you just use it. And then I don't know. I really don't understand how this is all going to work. You know, it's going to be like, remember at the beginning of sports writer Twitter when everybody was accidentally posting their DMs?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be like that. There's going to be, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm just picking names out of a hat, but like Jason Light is going to accidentally, you know, Slack. I don't know. Give me the name of another GM. Jason Light is accidentally going to Slack Bill O'Brien and be like, hey, you know, I need this trade. But instead he's going to like post it on the display of his like it's going to show up as like display text on his background, like on FaceTime or something like that. You know, something ridiculous is going to happen.
I think that is a fair oracle. In fact, you could have used that as your oracle, that something strange would happen. And I think it's more likely than not. The 1 to 2 minute mulligan or pause or extension, whatever you want to call it, I'm not exactly sure how that would work, and maybe they haven't worked out all of the details. The time on the call was about 30 minutes, and most of it was focused on this assertion that they were going forward with the 2020 season as planned. So we didn't quite get into the nitty-gritty of how that extension would work and how teams would be able to use it, and what happens if you use it once, but then there's a legitimate technical issue at some point later in the round. So there's a big potential for disaster, Connor.
Many a great sentences that I've said to you have started this way, but you've never seen the movie Draft Day, I'm guessing, right?
I have not.
You have not. Okay. So I was actually thinking a lot about the movie Draft Day recently, and when I was writing this topic, because in the movie, basically the quick synopsis for you, Jenny, is that Kevin Costner is the general manager of the Browns. He has like the 7th overall pick in the draft, and the owner puts a squeeze on him and says, you need to make a splash. So he trades like 4 years worth of first round picks to move up to number 1. And then He takes a player that nobody expects at number one, a defensive end that he loves, and everybody's freaking out, and he needs to get all the value back. And so he basically then trades like 4 years of second round picks to get the number seven pick back or something like that. But when he gets his old pick back, he's calling this panicked young general manager in Jacksonville, and he like purposely lets the clock wind down, and he's like, everybody's going to be mad at you, and you're going to ruin your life, and if you don't do this trade, and the guy's like sweating, and it's very awful acting. But I could imagine that happening this year, because if there's less experienced executives in the booth, I mean, if I'm Bill Belichick, I'm just shooting everybody phone calls with a minute left and offering them horrific trades to see if they'll take it.
It is interesting, too, because we have seen some of these people be not super tech savvy. And I am saying this as a person who is horribly tech unsavvy. I am a last adopter of everything. But we've all seen them, you know, Belichick with the sideline surface tablet, throwing it to the ground, right? So if they can only have 10 people in the room at any given time, and they're supposed to maintain 6 feet of distance, can you imagine what would happen if there's a technical issue while Bill Belichick is trying to execute a trade? I can't imagine that someone would keep a safe 6 feet distance as they were rushing over to try to make sure they could resolve this issue.
I would love if they did, if the Patriots did their draft on, what's his boat now? It's probably six rings now, right?
Or yeah, probably six rings, yeah.
Yeah, if they just did it aboard six rings in like the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, that would be something.
Oh boy, that would be amazing. Wow, there's a lot of options here.
I mean, you could do anything, you know, apparently. Okay, so another draft question for you, topic number four, completely apropos of nothing, and I put apropos in there because I want to show everybody, including our old friend Jonathan Jones, that I know how to pronounce it now. Apropos of nothing, the Giants are sitting at number four in what could be a quarterback class similar to the year that they drafted Saquon Barkley second. A lot of teams want to move up to get their guy. The Giants are just kind of sitting there in the middle. Does Dave Gettleman finally trade out this time, or does he continue his Herculean streak of ignorance when it comes to draft economics?
The fact that it was a big headline at the Combine when Gettleman said they were open for business was somewhat amusing, because everyone knows his track record. So the fact that he said something as simple as like, yeah, we're open for business at number four, was like a stunning development.
Do you think he finally does it? Do you think this is the year that he finally backs out of his pick?
I do, because they have that valuable slot right before the Dolphins, and everyone knows the Dolphins are looking for a quarterback.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's going to be forced to, if not, you know, I think that there is a legitimate push for Gettleman to change his ways, I think, if he wants to stay around, you know, and I don't think the Giants want to get into a situation where they have, you know, Joe Judge then weighing in as in his second year and who the general manager is going to be or whatever the situation might be. But I really think that he's going to have to show a little bit of savviness. He's going to have a, I don't know, whatever you would call it, a John Lynch moment, where the year that he got the two players that he liked in the first round or something like that, where he's really going to have to show a little bit of panache in this draft. And I think that that starts with getting a king's ransom for that number four pick.
Another thought just occurred to me, Connor.
Dave Gettleman using technology at home to...
Yeah, riffing off the last topic, you know, because he's already kind of expressed an aversion to computers and such. And I could see the potential for some draft night jokes if something were to get hung up a little bit. Like if you were the first person to use the 1 to 2 minute exemption, for instance, which could happen, right?
Oh, God.
To execute a trade at number four, Dave Gettleman is the first person to request extra 2 minutes.
And then everyone would talk about the four computer people that the Giants hired, or the whatever it was, the five computer people that he talked about in his press conference.
That's exactly right.
You want to know my hot take on this topic, elderly NFL types and technology?
I do
have a hot take here. I think that is 99% just a front, a total lie. I think it's a complete and total lie. I remember covering the Giants and listening to Tom Coughlin be like, oh, it's amazing, you know, on these phones, they have group text, and so I can text both of my sons at once, and everyone's running with it and being like, how amazing. Tom Coughlin was one of the cutting edge analytics coaches in the NFL. He was one of the first coaches with GPS chips and shoulder pads. He was constantly searching for an edge in that way. That guy knew more about technology than a lot of people. And they were I think the first team in 2010 or 11 to start using Pro Football Focus data when they won the Super Bowl that year. I think that so much of that is just like this bit that they play for some reason, and I don't know why. It's like cool to say that you don't know what it is, but like Bill Belichick completely knows what FaceTime is, and I'm guessing he has an Instagram account too.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All the my face or whatever the jokes are, yeah, playing into the stereotype a little bit.
Just not falling for it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a ruse. I think that's a smart take, Connor.
That said, we will be able to separate the players from the actual technology strugglers in this draft, which I think will be very interesting. All right, another fun topic coming up. What do we have next?
The Buccaneers will reveal their new uniforms next week, hopefully sparing us from the insane microwave clock numbers and fever dream color combination. Great wordplay there, Connor. What has been your favorite uniform alteration of the last 20 years, and how might the Buccaneers learn from some past mistakes?
What's your favorite, Jenny?
Well, I really love the Chargers powder blues, so I liked when they went back to the powder blues as their primary uniform in 2019, and they had the gold face masks. I thought that was excellent.
I think that a lot of teams overthink. I had a version of this take when the Rams introduced their new logo, and while some of their logos were rooted in historical logos, they went back to like the 1940s logo and kind of modernized it a little bit. I think that most of the people who control these decisions overlook the very simple things that, like, basically every like 6 or 7 years we just want like the old thing back, and then we'll have the old thing back, and then you just go back to the, you know, you just toggle between, you go back and forth and back and forth. Like the Jets could have legitimately gone back and forth between the old Namath uniforms, which they had when we were covering the team, and then those Kelly green with the Jets font and the Boomer Esiason years. They could have gone back and forth with them every year and just slightly tweaked and modernized every year, every 10 years for the rest of eternity. And I think everybody would have been fine, and they would have bought the uniforms. And I think that goes for anybody. I mean, the Buccaneers, you go from the red and the pewter to the creamsicle, and then you go back to the red and pewter, and you go back to the creamsicle, or the Seahawks, or any of these things. Like, you don't need to keep doing this deal where you're trying to please everybody and you're like sourcing this out to design firms. The Rams were talking about the golden ratio. What is that called? The circulation on the horn is based on golden
like the
ratio,
Fibonacci like code.
The Fibonacci sequence or whatever that is. Yeah, like we're getting way too complicated here. Like Rams fans, it's like, okay, just go back to blue and yellow, and now go back to blue and gold, and now go back to blue and yellow, and go back to blue and gold. We're very simple people. Like I don't think that anything is that complicated.
Yeah, no, that's I think that's a good point, Connor. Unless something is really terrible, like the Bucks' current uniforms, like do need scrapping. But I love another one I love is the Kelly green for the Eagles. I'd love to see them go back to that.
100% in the way that the wings on the helmet. I loved that. Totally love that. If I had to pick my favorite uniform alteration of the last 20 years, it would be. And I guess this is technically not an alteration because it's the Color Rush uniforms, but the Giants went back to the 80s and 90s look for their Color Rush, and they had the helmet with the block Giants on it, which is one of my favorite uniforms. I think that's really cool looking. But yeah, I mean, all the recent updates where they've been like way out of bounds have just been terrible. You know, in the Jets, you could tell tried to draw inspiration from those old Boomer Esiason uniforms, but then just made them so generic that they just look like meh, you know.
Yeah, there's been a lot of uniform changes that have been ugh. But I agree. I like the Giants combo a lot, and I liked the all whites. I actually thought I didn't hate the Color Rush overall. My mother was a huge fan of the Color Rush, and when it went away, she would text me, I really missed the color rush like every couple weeks. And I was like, wow, this is hilarious. But, and the Saints also had a good color rush because they also went with like the all whites and then they had the gold letters, right? So I'm just kind of a big fan of those as well.
Bucks aside, what are your worst two or three uniform combinations in the league?
In the league? Okay. Wow.
I'm guessing Bucks is 32 for you or?
Yeah, probably. Well, now I haven't thought about this, Connor. You're springing this on me.
I know this is a tough one. Think.
I didn't really care for the Browns revamp. That didn't do anything for me. Boy, I mean, in terms of color rush, like the Jaguars mustard was a disaster.
Woof. Yeah, that was a tough one. I would say, if I feel like the Titans need something going on for them. I'm not totally excited about them. The Texans could use a little bit of like an oomph, like the teams that aren't tied to something completely classic, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
They could probably stand to upgrade. Like, I mean, you're never going to change the Steelers or the Colts or like any of these teams that are, steeped in tradition. But, you know, if you're like the Texans or something like that, just do something crazy, you know? I don't know. Really, really entertain me, you know? But I think some of them are just boring, you know? And I do hope that, I think the Browns are trying again this year again.
Right. Because yeah. It didn't go so well, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully they just, you know, even if they went back to the 99 ones, I think that would be fine, which was just kind of what they had before they left. And then I can start wearing my old Tim Couch jersey again. You know, which would be great. Yeah.
Perfect.
So I would like that, you know.
Good outcome for everyone.
Totally. All right. So we have our, this is the end of the week show. So we're going to bring back the Oracle and we're going to bring back the Ventus Consensus. I'm warming back up my prediction muscles, trying to at least prognosticate on a season that we are told is going to proceed as planned at this point. So getting into the draft prep at this point, I know, Jenny, that you and I are both staring down the barrels of our first mock drafts of the season. So there's a lot of excitement there, especially after Dr. V won our mock draft challenge last year. You destroyed the field, lapping me and Albert Breer. I would say that it was a masterclass in mock drafting, and so looking forward to that. But kind of getting my radar out here and starting to look around and to kind of see what is out there and what teams might do what. My projection is that we have a team outside of the top 12 who moves inside of the top 5, a la, you know, maybe that Eagles year where they moved up to Carson Wentz. I think they were 11 maybe, but I think we're going to have a big move from outside of the top 12 into the top 5. That's my oracle heading into the draft.
Okay, I like it. For a quarterback.
Yes. I think that there is a team sniffing around on one of the big three, or perhaps, you know, someone like Love is going to go sooner than we expect, and the team gets nervous and just moves up to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. But I think someone is sniffing around on one of those people that we're not really accounting for and is hyper-aggressive right now.
Interesting. And maybe that is, they trade with Dave Gettleman. Maybe he's their dance partner there.
It all comes full circle.
All comes for full circle.
What about your Ventus Consensus? Because you know what? I think this is good. You know, we have been ending the show on an agreement, something to make everybody feel good before we leave. You know, we've been doing this for 2 years now. Forget about it. But it's the time where everyone can use it now. And I feel like the Ventus Consensus is more important than ever before.
Well, this is not an important topic, but since we're on the discussion of the draft and such, and they are planning to go forward with these virtual kits for each of the top prospects, I'm really hoping that there's an opportunity to have a cool backdrop. You know, on Zoom, West Elm designed a bunch of home backdrops. And if they are using Zoom or whatever platform that's hack proof that they decide to go with, like, really, there's a lot of potential here, Connor. You know, Joe Burrow could have some kind of Bengals related backdrop. They could make the a Vegas like Bellagio fountains, this is where we would have been if there wasn't a pandemic. Really a lot of possibilities here. You could be anywhere in the world. So I don't know, might mix things up a little bit.
It makes me think of like when I'm traveling and I'll FaceTime my daughter, all she wants me to do is put the little blinky emojis that like are the blinking arrows that point to my face instead of like actually seeing me. And if I was a draft prospect, I would probably do that, right?
Oh, you know, see, yeah.
You just put like all the little like blinky lights in front of your face or like the GIFs or anything like the emojis, stuff like that.
Yeah, there was one that I saw on Twitter the other day where someone's boss had made themselves into like a worm underground in dirt and they couldn't figure out how to switch back. So they spent the entire Zoom call that way. I mean, imagine that. Like, that would be pretty hilarious. That would go down in history for sure.
Emblematic of a lot of people's work from home experiences, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Definitely where we're at. But we've been able to navigate the technology so far, Connor, much like many executives in the NFL. So, and haven't been hacked. So that's a positive.
Knock on wood.
All right. Well, we'll be back next Tuesday on the new 2 times a week Weekside podcast. So thanks for joining us this week. The MMQB Weekside podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravec is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.